Well, good morning. It's this is sort of the cocktail hour before the show. Everyone's getting their beverages and talking, catching up, showing pictures of the grandchildren. It's lovely. It's very nice, actually. Good morning. Welcome to the program. This happens occasionally on Thursdays because there's the taping. Time at the tone, 9:12. This happens occasionally on Thursdays because we're making the transition from the Media Project taping to the live program that is the roundtable panel. So when everybody is seated and
I didn't know we were on the air.
Yeah.
you mean this people hear us talk when we?
No, I think those people left a long time ago. Actually, yeah, I think they left a while ago. Well,
good night, everybody.
Please tip your waitresses. Have a lovely evening. Let me introduce the panel to you. We still have one. We have one tardy member.
Yes, he's making a phone call that has needed immediate attention.
Okay. Was it a doctor?
No.
Okay. Let me introduce our panel to you, Teresa Borden. There he is. All right.
Nice of you to show up.
Teresa Bourgeois is here. She is a communications consultant. We're thrilled to have her here. She was here yesterday and just said, you know what, I had too much fun. I have to come back.
Did she go home?
No.
Just back again because, you know, there's so little to talk about.
That's right. Ira Fussfeld is with us as well. We're thrilled to see Ira. He is the Kingston Freeman Publisher Emeritus, a longtime journalist, and we're thrilled to have him on our program, as always.
Thank you. Great to be back.
Wonderful to have you back. Vera Acarias-Kelly is with us. She is a political science professor in comparative politics at Siena College in Loudonville, New York, and we love when Vera is with us. And
she's
thank you
brilliant.
Very much. She is brilliant.
Oh. Thank you.
Thank
I
you very much.
I was just going to ask, are you as excited to have me on as you are seeing
I am.
Ira?
You know what? You are all my children. I love you all when you come in, and it's great to see you. And you all have your different dates, and it's nice to catch up with everybody. And the two of you both were scheduled to be on last week. Neither one of you were on last week, and it's just nice to have you here. Now.
You think he means it?
No, I don't.
No. We'll find out.
Why weren't we on it last week?
Yeah, we're going to hear about his favorite child.
No, yeah.
God.
Nice, Teresa. Very good. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning. Yes, indeed, my favorite. How are you?
I didn't sleep well. Thank you. Thank you for asking.
What's up with you? What got into you?
Worried about the LA Dodgers.
I worry about this. I worry
series.
About that. You know, I worry about, you know, my friend Michael Oreskes and Rick Smith's friend Michael Oreskes. We all knew him well, and we were all very upset about what has transpired. He has now basically admitted that he did all of this.
You should probably explain to the listeners who he is.
Yeah, well, yes, Michael Oreskes was the head newsman at NPR. And before that had been the New York Times bureau chief here in Albany, which is where I met him and where I knew him from, where Rex knew him from. And when you see your friends make major mistakes and errors in their lives, you can say, well, they sure shouldn't have done that. But you can also feel something for them. You can't, Teresa. You're looking strangely at me.
No, no, no.
You have pursed lips.
No. I'm worried about his victims, but I do think it's nice that you're worried about it. I'm sure you absolutely are also.
Yes, I just said that, basically.
Absolutely. Yeah. But we have to worry about him.
It's just an onslaught, though, isn't it? I mean, it's every day. How long is this going to go on for?
Well, I asked the question on the Media Project, and it's been crossing my mind, and I'm hesitant to talk about it because I'm going to misspeak and make it sound like I'm dismissing the victims, which I don't want to do. What's happened and what's alleged to have happened is obviously terrible. I'm just wondering about in certain cases, and apparently not in Harvey Weinstein's case or in Brett Ratner's case, but with Mark Halperin, for example, well-known journalist who was accused of doing something that he has subsequently admitted 10 years ago when he was at ABC News, sought counseling at the time, and as far as we know, in the 10 years since when he has really made a name for himself, there have been no repeat occurrences. Does he deserve to lose his reputation, his job, his livelihood, as opposed to somebody who it might have been doing it, such as Oreskes, even while he was at NPR? Originally, it was said he only was doing this at the New York Times. Now NPR is saying we knew what was going on here, too.
Well, Vera, I see a sort of look on your face.
I mean, I find this discussion very interesting because, you know, it It is not clear to me that we know all the facts
That's
about
probably
this.
Right, yeah.
And I believe it tends to be the case that when people have done something 10 years ago, there's a certain pattern.
Mm. And a worldview, I find, a character flaw.
Yeah, I mean, it's something that really is unaddressed in most societies, including in this society, and suddenly we have, as women, a platform to express what's been happening. And I have to say, you know, sexual harassment, sexual assault is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And most men, unless they are having in-depth conversations with women in their lives, are not as aware of how this happens. And I'm really glad we're having more of a conversation about what happens in professional environments to women on all levels.
So let me bring the two very good points together for a moment, if I may. So let's look at the case, and we'll preface this by saying we don't know much. We only know what we know, right? Mm-hmm. We only know what we're told. We only know what's reported. We only know it in this, and I'm going to give the example, which is Dustin Hoffman.
Mm-hmm.
So Dustin Hoffman in 1984 or 85, I believe, a young woman on the set of Death of a Salesman, and makes this allegation now. Now, unlike...
She was very young.
Very young. Unlike Michael Oreskes, unlike Harvey Weinstein, unlike Brett Ratner, unlike many of the others, there have been a slew of people who have come forward. And the thing, these cases have been corroborated. The reports have gone out. And again, I echo what Ira said about you certainly do not want to in any way fault the victim here, because God knows when this happened, it had to have been traumatic, and obviously still is, or they wouldn't be saying it. But is there a place for that to be discussed prior to it going public in such a way where the person is then brought into the same? Because what I'm seeing is that he... Well, I particularly don't know. I don't know what I think about Dustin Hoffman. He never struck me as a very nice guy. I don't know him. I have no idea. What I'm asking is now he's put into the same group as...
That's right.
As Harvey Weinstein, no. as some of the others. And I'm just wondering, is that... this is sort of bringing these two things together. Is that fair until these people have had their day court? And I don't know the answer to that.
And Joe, we're going to talk about this on the Media Project this week. We already have. But it is interesting that every one of these accusations, no matter how relatively minor to Harvey Weinstein, is issued within the third paragraph you're reading about Harvey Weinstein. So in other words, if you're talking about Mike Oreskes, and how he advanced himself sexually towards women. That's
in
right.
A pattern. There was a pattern.
Yeah, you know, there was. And by the way, he's admitted that. So I think that's why we can speak in this way.
He's just not admitted to rape charges.
No. He didn't rape anybody.
I think
there's several women that have alleged.
Right.
Right.
Michael
Oreskes
raped them?
No. Harvey Weinstein.
Oh no, Harvey Weinstein. Yeah. That's a different story. Yeah. I think everybody understands what the monster aspects of Harvey Weinstein are. So I'm talking about if somebody is accused of doing something, which is relatively minor, but is still offensive to women. Right. And then you see but within the third paragraph of the story on that, Weinstein is being brought into the article and what he's alleged to have done. Is that fair?
I'm only saying this to bolster your argument, which is I think if we take the words out of major and minor, I think all of these are fairly major. But I agree with the premise, which is it the fact that. Because these stories are coming out and we're talking about them that we paint it with a broad brush. And yesterday I was watching NBC News with Lester Holt, and they did a 90-second package. And it was, again, it started off with Harvey Weinstein, and then they just went through this group of people. Those charges are all very different. The situations are all very different. And I just wonder whether we, a kind of round-em-up media mentality of saying, oh, okay, well, here's another one who's done the same thing. And in some of these cases, they're different. It just seems like all I'm saying is it seems like we have to be more careful than we're being.
Yeah. So can I just say something, because I want to also take a step away from thinking about how it's packaged, as you say, because this is part the public, discussion on what has happened with too many women in professional environments is part of a larger problem where women complain to their immediate superiors or go to the HR offices, and they're either not taken seriously, or they're offered hush money,
right,
or they're intimidated, or they're said, oh, honey, this isn't so bad, why don't you just deal with it, or variations of those kinds of responses. So really what we should reflect on is how many women are out there that have been targeted, their career snuffed out, intimidated. They're now working in areas that they never intended to work in. And this is the first time in my lifetime that we actually publicly speak about the rights of women in a professional environment. So I'm personally a lot more concerned about where we're at and what the rights of these women are, and why it is that in organizations we have HR offices that are not even taking their own female employees seriously.
Okay, so I need to come back and ask you a follow-up question, which is you're a human being. You are obviously a successful professor. What's been your experience?
I mean, it's a pretty personal question, but I have to say there are really dismissive comments that you hear at professional conferences, language used, attempts to convince you that, maybe one way, if you acted a different way, you'd be more professional in terms, or you would be more successful in a professional environment. I think I'm very outspoken, and I've been lucky not to have been sort of cornered in a particular way, but I think I'm aware of a lot of my colleagues that have experienced that, colleagues.
So let me ask this question, because I find it to be part of my concern here, and that is because, and I hope I'm making my point. I don't know that I am, but I hope I'm making my point. We saw with the Kevin Spacey allegations, and I think we're also seeing this with the allegations against Dustin Hoffman. These are not cases of sexual harassment. These are cases of pedophilia in many cases. I mean, you're talking about 20, 30-year-old people going after children, 14, 15, 17 years old. What I worry about is that we're putting all of those into the same bunch. And I think, it seems to me, they're all horrible. I'm not saying one thing is more horrible than the other, but I am saying that it seems like we have to differentiate as we go into this right now, that every moment of every day there's another name that comes aboard, that we're looking at stories and cases that have, for want of a better word, nuances that we have to look at very, very closely.
I need to hear from Teresa on this. She's sitting there, and she's obviously somewhat concerned.
Well, I guess I take your point, Joe, in that each one of these cases are different and they have to be considered differently. But my focus is, I think, the same as Vera's, is on the victims and...
Well, I agree with you.
Right. And I know you're not disagreeing. And I have not given a lot of thought to the packaging of these, I guess, is what I'm trying to say in that regard. But I do think that we have to understand how this has gone on for so long, why people aren't heard. There are always people who know. There are always people who enable. In some cases, the people who enable are women. And I don't dismiss the Mark Halperin. I think the Mark Halperin case is egregious because it went on for a long time, and you cannot tell me that people at ABC didn't know. People knew, and they allowed it to continue. And a lot of women were driven out of the business, were hurt, were scarred for a long time. And even though it was 10 years ago, those women haven't forgotten. Mm-hmm. And that was handled in a way where it was, in fact, scrutinized before it was reported. Because the reporters, you know, who finally got these women to talk, they verified in a lot of different ways their story. So the fact that they could verify the story meant that people knew, because these women had told other people. And the question is, how is it allowed to go on for so long, and what lessons can we learn from that? Because you know it's happening right now, and it's happening to people in all sorts of circumstances where people who are powerful abuse people who have less power.
And we had a letter from Julianne who said, "Sorry, Alan, there are absolutely no act of sexual assault that is minor."
Thank you.
Doesn't matter what the perpetrator did. The perpetrator did. They're still a perpetrator. But there really is a definitional question here, in my mind, of a guy who comes on to a woman inappropriately and says to her, you know, beautiful, whatever else, and somebody who forces himself on a woman. Now, aren't there distinctions?
Right. Well, there's a degrees of assault and there's a degrees of harassment.
Harassment and an assault are different.
Right. Yes. Yeah. And they're different. But for the person who experiences that, it's not a minor situation to them.
You're right.
I think that's the point, using the word minor.
I always tell a story when I was getting bar mitzvahed, and I was walking from 68th Street to 96th Street in my home, and I'm walking on the park side of Central Park on the east side of the street, and a guy stands up and yells at the top of his voice, "Hey kid, you want a?" And it was something I'm not going to talk about, you know, here, but here I am, 76 years old,
and
I still remember it.
You remember it.
Why do you suppose that this is? We can just kick around for a minute. The Cosby case.
We have exactly a minute.
Okay, the Cosby case was sensational, and it was extremely highly covered, and pictures of the victims were all over the place. Their interviews. Yet it didn't. The groundswell that is occurring now did not occur after the Cosby case. It occurred after the Weinstein case.
And he was raping those women.
Yeah.
I mean, that is such a case because, I mean, there were the drugs involved apparently, and it was. But I don't know. I mean,
well,
I think
the drugs were used to insinuate anything. I'm just wondering.
No, but the drugs were used for rape.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah,
there was drugs.
So, what caused the tipping point is the question. Why did the Harvey Weinstein?
Can we end with those questions, and then we'll come back and we'll try and answer them. Okay. We're not going to, but we'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
We'll be
right
back.
We're going to talk about tax
after. Oh yeah, sure. Sex and taxes, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back right after this. Well, interestingly, we started our discussion, and so we've gotten to nothing on our list, but that's okay. We got into.
Are we on the air yet?
Yes, we are on the air yet. We're on the air yet. Welcome back, Ira. Nice to have you here.
We haven't really got off the microphones.
When does the show start?
We continue discussions.
So you were bringing up some great questions. There were some great questions that were going right before the break, and so let me, in a way of just moving on and addressing the many, many letters that we got, which we'll get to in a second here. What do we do about it? I mean, it seems that we have, I agree with you, Vera, that we're having this conversation now. And I guess my point originally was, okay, but if we do it in this way, are we having the right conversations at the right time? And are the right people having the right conversations? And because it comes down to, we were talking about this during the break, of the people that we've known in our lives who have been, who have certainly fit this bill, and nothing was done. And what is our individual responsibility in keeping that from happening to other people?
Well, I have to say is, it's interesting we're asking whether we're having the right conversation when for the first time we're having a conversation. So I think that's actually something that we need to allow to happen first of all now. I think a lot of women feel so encouraged that other outspoken women have taken the lead in positions of some influence, and now this allows others to speak up and explain what has happened to them. And so maybe by reading some of those accounts and seeing how predators operate, we understand a little better what happens in our environments.
I agree with you entirely. When I talk about the other conversations, though, we were having this discussion last week, and Rosemary Armeo was on the program. And Rosemary took the tack, which was, where were these women when it happened? And why didn't they speak out? And she was being very direct to the women who, in many of these cases, who had not spoken out sooner and allowed it to go on. I bring up the question about the conversations that we're having, because it seems that these are also conversations that we need to have.
Well, I really disagree with the sort of blaming women for not being more outspoken.
Well, I do too, but it was surprising.
I find that really troubling.
But Rosemary is not the only one to bring up the point.
I understand that. I still disagree with it. I think it's entirely wrong. And the idea that you expect a woman to speak up on behalf, if she's in a situation that's really complex.
I just want to get in here because I don't want to misquote her, and
okay.
Because she's not here to to defend herself, and I want to make sure I get this right. Her point was not the women, not every woman. What her point was is women like Angelina Jolie and established actresses who have careers, who will still have careers, had careers after, and still knew what was going on and didn't come forward. That was her point.
Yeah, and the point is that these women were younger then. They were not in positions of influence then. They told often their boyfriends or partners and discussed it in sort of more intimate environments to see about what can be done. They tried to find help, but they didn't feel socially, societally, or culturally encouraged or even permitted to speak about these kinds of things because it was so pervasive. There were certain cultures that were so pervasive in terms of silencing women and denying women careers because of this. And when your dream is to become an actress, to be successful in your field, often as a younger person, you don't quite know where to go because there are not so many women that will counsel you on what you can be doing, how you can resist. I mean, this is shocking when it happens to you.
It is, and I also, this is the other thing I worry about, though, because of, and I know I've talked a lot about this morning, about the narrative, but this narrative of both in journalism and in entertainment, but this isn't journalism and entertainment, this is everywhere. This is in a school system, this is in a hospital, this is in a law office, this is in a supermarket, this is everywhere, and I think that has to be, I mean, we go after these stories because they're the headlines when the people are known.
I think the question now that I keep saying to people is, will this be an Anita Hill moment or a bump stock moment? Mm-hmm. And by that, I mean...
I'm sorry, I missed that. Oh,
will this be an Anita Hill moment or a bump stock moment? By a bump stock moment, I mean, you know, we had the horrific shooting in Las Vegas. And
we talked
for
about
48
for
hours, we talked about bump stocks, and then we stopped talking about
but
it.
But Anita Hill was a long time ago, Teresa.
But the Anita Hill moment, when that happened... There was some cultural change. I mean, obviously, long, long way to go, but it did open up a broader conversation, and people did rethink things, and there was some movement, some change. Not enough, but there was some change. So I think that's the one, you know, it's the fundamental question. Is this just a moment in time that we're going to pass through and nothing will change?
No, Clarence Thomas is still sitting on the Supreme Court of the United States. Stop him.
I know, but I'm just hoping for incremental change as opposed to nothing, because I think that if we even could get some incremental change, that would be a big thing. And so then I think the key question is, what about the enablers? Because you're going to have offenders, but there's only going to be protection for women if those people around them, if they feel that there's a place that they can go to, that they're going to be heard, and that they're always enablers. They're enablers who, you know, with Harvey Weinstein, who made the appointments for him. And some of them were women. Sure. You know, they're always going to be those close enablers. And then there's the more loose enablers, the people who head of the HR office, who you go and they tell that. And so they might move you to a different office. They might move you around. But
Or move you out.
Move you out. Yeah. And then there's the signing these silencing agreements where they'll pay you off, but you have to, you know, sign a non-disclosure agreement. These non-disclosure agreements have to go away.
Yes,
they have to go away because that's a real serious problem.
They do, and also it's part of the problem too, is because people are saying, well, these things happened 20 years ago. Why are you making a big deal about it now? Well, we're making a big deal about it now because that's when the non-disclosure agreements have gone away and the people have moved on enough that they can speak out.
But the reality is, if you have a CEO or a top person in an organization, or a powerful person, a person like Mark Halperin, or a key to an organization, and somebody makes a complaint, they're not going to move the person who's key to the organization. They're going to move the person who makes the complaint because that person's disposable. So you need a change in culture. You need a culture that says, in this environment, we don't accept that behavior. We'll find another person. Right. The Mark Halperins, the elite people, will find somebody else. You're not you're not indispensable. Mm-hmm. You can't behave that way. You got to go.
And meanwhile, we have our president who seems to be just sort of staying out of the fray.
Immune to it all.
Well, see, that's the fundamental message.
Not according to the New York Times this morning, by the way.
Uh-huh. But
they have a major story on how the accusers are coming back and coming forward to really press their cases along with their lawyers.
With Trump.
But to me, that tape was so disturbing.
That
people could look at that. This I never understood, and particularly with the evangelicals. And I'd love people to write in and tell us why they weren't. Why you could listen. I mean, you didn't have to take somebody else's word for it. You listened to what he said. He talked about treating women that way, and it was okay. People moved on. And I still contend. I think, they said, who leaked that tape? I think they leaked it. I think the campaign leaked it because they wanted to manage how it got out.
Well, it's true. It may be. The question I would ask you, particularly the women panelists this morning, is there another side to this? The letters we're getting are, there is no other side to it. And yet, the ERA, remember that, the Equal Rights Amendment, was defeated principally because a lot of women voted against it.
That's why I'm saying so disturbing. Women voted for Trump.
Yes. I was going to make that very point.
They voted for Trump. That's
yes.
just so
White
disturbing.
Women voted in large numbers for Trump. And by the way, according to the polling, would again, no matter what he said.
There's some evidence that a big part of that is because the right-wing conservative media, specifically Fox News, either did not report it or did not report it as nearly as extensively enough. And so that there are actually people in this country who don't know that this tape exists.
Well, I think there's another side to this. This is one of the most famous tapes relatively in history. That he said, I'm going to grab these women by their genitals. I can't believe there aren't. I have a hard time believing that people didn't know.
Go back and read, if you have not, the column in the Times the other day by David French, who coincidentally was on Bill Maher the other night. And if you saw it, you would probably wonder what Chris Elliott was doing on Bill Maher, because he looked exactly alike. But he said he is a right winger who was not a Trumper. He also didn't vote for Hillary. And he was trying to describe the phenomenon of what's going on in this country. And he basically describes the reason that people on the right are looking the other way regarding Trump is, one, he believes that Trump has very much succeeded in getting through the notion of fake news. They simply don't believe what they're hearing it reported. And secondly, they have such a hatred, in this specifically for Hillary, but generally the other side, that they just are saying Trump may be bad, but the other side is worse. So there are those things going on in the world. I think it's Sunday's Times. David French wrote it.
Let's take a break. We have a slew of letters, and I'd like to get to them, and then we'll move on to some other topics. Let's do that. We'll be right back after this. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have a lot of letters, so we'll get to those, and then we'll move on from this topic.
Okay. Good morning, panel. Thank you, Vera, for clearly enunciating the issues around sexual harassment. Just like terrorism and gun violence, somehow the discussion does not adequately remind us of the victims, those whose lives are forever altered. And that's
Thank
from
you.
Maureen.
Thank you for the
Thank
writer.
You, Maureen.
Okay, and Jill says, please comment on why it seems that the president gets a pass on sexual harassment, assault issues. So sad. I want to refer you all to the New York Times this morning, where the whole thing, I think it's front page attention, where it's being re-upped, where the president's, where the lawyers are going to court, and there is a whole regeneration of the Trump sexism coming out of this, which, by the way, the letter makes a very good point.
There's sexism and then there's sexual harassassment.
More than sexism, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a difference between sexism, sexual harassment, sexual assault.
Right.
You know, there are variations in our definitions we must use.
That's right, but that's correct. But where does the line get drawn for everybody as opposed to some people? How dare that guy come up to me in a workplace and ask me if I want to have dinner with him?
Well, that's not
at
all inappropriate. That's not what we're talking about.
But
we're talking about somebody who's cornering me in an office and pushing me around intimidating me and touching me or saying, you will not be promoted unless you do ABC. Like we know from, for example, predatory behavior in Fox offices, Fox News offices, Weinstein, and so on. That's what we're talking about.
No, that's what you're talking about. And I'm saying there are other people who are expanding that definition to say any kind of sexual approach, which is, do you want to have dinner tonight?
That's not a sexual approach.
That's
not an invitation to dinner.
That's what you say.
Dinner.
And I'm saying that there are people who
No,
we're talking about Harvey Weinstein, and we're talking about Mark Halperin, who...
I hear you, and Oreskes in the case of this morning's discussion.
Who people were afraid of him.
Yes, I get that.
Women were
afraid of
him.
But I'm also saying this is going to call for some definition.
They are defined.
That's not the problem.
And you can all yell at me as much as you want, but the fact of the matter is, it doesn't matter to me. I'm just telling you that this thing is expansive.
Yeah, but
I'm telling you the women know the difference between being invited to dinner and saying yes or no, or being, you know,
or having somebody in the Oreskes case having a tongue shoved down their throat.
Right.
I mean, that's
yes.
a big difference.
Joe,
or not that. Getting a promotion because you won't sleep with the guy. Women know the difference, Alan. Don't worry. They know the difference.
Not all women, and there are people who are defining unwanted sexual advances as saying, okay, you're here in a professional capacity, and you're inviting me to dinner. And I know what that means, and you know what that means.
Okay, Ellen, I really don't know what to say to that because I don't know what you're insinuating and why you're speaking on behalf of women. I'm not sure.
Oh, come on.
I understand at all where you're going here.
Right.
Okay.
I don't think that the problem now that we need to discuss is not whether or not people feel uncomfortable because somebody invites them to dinner. The problem here that needs that finally is getting some attention is that women are attacked in an office or that women
now,
are attacked in an
come
elevator
on, Teresa,
or
I
that
agree.
Women
I agree
can't
with,
get promoted because,
I, come on.
Because they won't
don't
sleep
lecture
with somebody.
Me on
That's
this.
What
could,
we're talking
I
about.
I could not agree with you more. So don't tell me I don't understand when somebody is attacking somebody or a Weinstein or a Mike or any of these other people are doing it. I am telling you that we all recognize that. That's inappropriate. It's wrong. It's terrible. I'm also saying that there's an expansion of what constitutes unwanted advances. That's all I'm saying.
So let me say something about dinner. If I am asked by somebody, would you like to have dinner with me? I have a choice to say yes or no.
That's right.
If I say no to you, and the next day you come back and you say, would you like to have dinner with me? And I say, no, thank you. I don't want to have dinner with you. And you come back the following day and say, you know, something else about it. Yeah, then maybe
and then
I'm,
you start
I'm
don't get it. Then you don't get assignments.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you get left out of meetings. Or, you know, they start talking about how your work product all of a sudden is not good. You know, then maybe the dinner question has a different meaning.
Lars says the sexual harassment should be aired because it gives courage to others to come out, as we've seen. Most harassers and rapists do not limit themselves to one incident. If you're not responsible with your power, you should lose it. There are plenty of strong, talented people out there that can fill the void of these criminals. Best, Lars. P.S. My wife is a physician. And she has been treated in a sexist manner, including harassment, at every stage of her training and career. Susan says, I think bringing up Harvey Weinstein when talking about other perpetrators is relevant in several respects. First, I think it helps illustrate that this predatory behavior tends to be conducted in a pattern with multiple victims. Second, it reinforces the important notion that we need to believe victims. Finally, I want to emphasize the point that this behavior has nothing to do with sex and has everything to do with power. That's from Susan.
Exactly right, mm-hmm. Susan. Thank you.
Lisa says, I think your discussion of packaging and not putting all men who harass women in the same package reminds me of white privilege. It's easy to be dispassionate and analytical when you are not the victim, and that's from Reverend Dr. Lisa.
Yes.
Janet says, your description of the variables of sexual assault, including the statement that they are, of course, upsetting to women, may be unfair to men who aren't as bad as Weinstein, so infuriated me that I'm on the side of the road writing this. Do you know how many assaults have never, ever been revealed to fear and despair? The history of sexual assault is so disgusting, egregious, imbalanced, and fatal to millions of women that your focus on the disparities in attacks is specious. Save that for the far distant future when women are on an equal footing with men, if ever. And that's from Janet.
Thank you for pulling over, Janet.
Yep.
And not trying to type while you're driving.
And for your point of view as well.
And for your point of view.
Very important insights. Thank you.
Rosemary says, not this Rosemary. You just asked why women are coming out alleging sexual abuse now, but they didn't after Cosby. I think their tipping point was Trump, an accused abuser becoming president. And Lee says, the limited wisdom I've acquired in 71 years of life has led me to realize that the understandable, righteous indignation expressed over the current attention to sexual harassment may be hiding the real issue. All men, mostly men, should be using the opportunity to search their personalities for past or present thoughts and denigrating women, whether acted upon or not. I'm not going to read the list because it's too long. Okay, Matt says, panel, would you have the same sympathy for those who are being accused of sexually assaulting women if they had just assaulted women? Instead of saying forcibly rubbing their bodies against women, they stabbed women, not fatally. Just
I don't understand that question.
Well, he's saying this business of would you say that somebody who rubbed their body against somebody, against a woman, was not forced sexual assault? The answer is, of course it is. Right? Anybody have any problem with that?
All right. We'll go another letter.
What'd you say? I am a man. Can't we for once, as men, put the onus on spotlight on men's behavior rather than on women's? Do we need to victimize women? For the moment, can't we put the definitional question on hold and give women in our lives, the mothers of our children, the opportunity to voice and express the frustrations and fears they have lived with most of their adult lives? Why can't we do that? I find it disappointing to hear from the men on the panel a parsing of the issue. Disappointing. Very disappointing.
Well, I agree. We need to have male allies. For sure, as women as well. You know, our friends, our family members, to be vigilant and help women, support women, and be, you know, leaders in society who don't behave like that. So we actually make progress in the way we interact with each other in terms of, you know, men and women.
Will this be a learning moment? Will any change anything?
Yes, that's
anything?
The big question.
That's the question. Yeah. Will anything change now?
And
well,
said,
I don't mean to be simplistic and go back to Trump, but if Trump, and I'm eager to read the New York Times now to see what they said today, but if Trump, in effect, is guilty of what many have already accused him of and what we heard on the tape, and he is allowed to not to escape from those allegations, it's going to be much harder for society to say there's nothing wrong with this.
Anne says, this will begin to end when men who have assaulted women come forward and apologize before the women they have assaulted go public.
Well, no, I mean, I think I'm big on enablers. You know, I think that the enablers in all the different degrees that people enable and have enabled for a long time, they're the ones who can help make a change in this and stop enabling. And you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah. Maybe you don't.
No, I know. Well, I know what an enabler is.
Yeah.
And I know how people who hide. People who do these despicable things are enablers.
Because they're afraid to lose their job. You know,
yeah,
they don't
sure.
really want to do it. There's a
yeah.
high ick factor, but they need their job. And so can you go to HR? Well, the HR person then becomes enabler because, you know, what are they, how are they going to go after the top people?
It's a permissive environment that allows this at every level. Right. And that has to be changed.
Just examine, are you enabling?
Where to start, says Gina. Parents teach young women to recognize and speak out. Teach sons not to do it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's an important conversation.
Or in some cases, let's be frank, sometimes it's women who do it too, so we can't ignore that.
I'm sorry?
Sometimes women harass.
Oh, yeah.
So well, we have to
well,
can't
yes,
ignore
but
that.
It's just the overwhelming
in terms of,
number
you know,
are men, right?
It has to be publicly discussed. Young people have to think about what is allowed, what isn't allowed.
He's shaking his head.
He's shaking his head. Okay.
Yeah. We got to go?
No, no. Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Good morning,
panel.
Are
we on the air
yet? Like so.
Is there a tax bill coming up today? What about health care?
Good morning, panel.
How did we get on this trail?
Good morning, panel.
I blame Ira.
Good morning, panel. Like so many women, I have been the victim of every single kind of sexual assault, and I can tell you it was not the flashes or predatory French kisses that have traumatized me for decades. It's all unacceptable, but should not be painted with a broad brush. Now, that's interesting. That's the point I think I was trying to make before.
So let me tell you a personal story. I didn't mention this earlier. When I was 14 years old, my family went on a skiing vacation. It was around Easter time. It was nice weather. At the ski lift, one of the guys that helped, you know, kids or, you know,
get onto the ski
lift. Actually grabbed with his hand inside my jacket and squeezed my breast. I have not been skiing since. I did not tell my parents. I did not tell my siblings. I was so ashamed and horrified at what happened to me. Not that it matters that I didn't go skiing again, but the fact that I've never really told anybody about it tells you something about what happens to young women when they're so shocked about what happens to them, and then it restricts life, you know. Not to say that not going skiing is a big deal in that sense, but you know, if stuff like that happens to you in school, you know, it might actually prevent you from pursuing an education, or you decide to drop out, or if something like that happens within your professional environment, it might stop you from becoming the person that you have the potential, you know, for your goals, the potential you have to achieve something. So it's really traumatizing, especially for younger people. Well, for women in general, for anybody who's a victim of such conduct.
Okay, Angela says, Bill Cosby's revelations were pre-Trump. Harvey Weinstein is post-Trump. This country elected a man who bragged about P, star Y, grabbing, and that just got our attention.
I think that's right.
All right. And Nancy says, dear panel, I think we need to stop asking what women should do. I think men need the education to learn what is not acceptable. What they think is funny is not. The education should start in middle school. As far as enablers go, why is it their job to stop sexual harassment and sexual assault? It is the man's job not to do it in the first place. Parents need to educate their sons. Companies need to educate their men. Well, Teresa, I know we have to go to a break, right, Joe?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
I agree.
We blew through the break, right?
No, you stay put. You're still on. Okay, Ray's
making
Ray's leaving. We're getting ready to leave. No, we're going to come to you in 2 seconds. Go ahead, Teresa.
But there's an answer to the enabler issue.
Yeah, it's absolutely the predator's fault. But what I'm saying is what allows it to remain in silence is the enablers. Women have to have somebody that they can go to, and they have to be listened to, and they have to be assisted. There has to be an environment in which people feel that there's a place to go to make it stop.
And if you're going, in some of these cases, going into an HR department and they're saying, well, more fool you for bringing it up,
right,
and then moving it on. That is
Or how about what evidence do you have to actually prove that this happened?
Or live with it.
Let's move you to a different department.
Are you saying HR departments are not treating these things seriously?
Yes, absolutely.
Then they're liable and they should be punished.
I'm saying that in some of these cases that we've heard where the women who are accusing these men have gone, in several cases, have gone to HR departments, and either that brings up the settlement or that's where the chain often moves on.
Right. It's thought that's one of the worst places to go because of
what happens.
Well,
my experience
from
running a company was what we knew I, as a manager of a company, knew specifically how serious it was to handle these charges, even if you didn't believe in the charges, you knew that you were responsible. You had a fiduciary responsibility to the company to make sure you had investigated and adjudicated the sexual harassment or any harassment complaint.
All right,
let's go to the
10 o'clock news at 10:15. Ray Graff is here. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning, which has been totally hijacked. And again, I blame you, Ira.
I was saying
hello to you.
And you started with Michael Oreskes.
Oh, that's true.
Joel
that's
picked
true.
Up from there.
How he feels.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, this is a very important story to a lot of people.
I agree.
We're getting a lot of letters, certainly. Well, most of them angry, but that's all right.
I got three more. One says, Alan isn't wrong. I'm amazed that the women on the panel are so worked up here. Being invited to dinner is a sexual advance, however preliminary, obviously a totally other level than harassment or assault, and that comes from Janet. Thank you, Janet. And Christina says, I understand what Alan is trying to say. By the way, I didn't pick these letters out. Sarah LaDuke did. I didn't. I'm a woman. I get what Alan's trying to say. There are absolutely varying degrees of accusations that are being clumped together. A man going out on a limb and kissing a coworker is rejected, and then him retreating is much different than a man kissing someone and persisting with his advances despite a woman's refusal of him. Let me just say, folks, that's not what I'm saying. I don't think it's acceptable for anybody to kiss anybody in an unwanted manner, and whether their tongue is in their mouths or not. It just isn't right. Also, grabbing a woman's body is in another category as well. Alan, of course, understands these differences, but his point is that the mild advances and accused rapists are being named in the same articles. This is wrong. Will ruin some people's careers who don't deserve it.
Okay, just for a fact-based question here, where's the article about the person who made a minor advance and was rejected?
Well, I don't know. All I know is that everybody is lumped into the same thing, and anybody who's accused, Harvey Weinstein is always in the piece, always. What happens is there is a shift to everything that Harvey did, which, of course, we all agree is terrible, terrible, awful. The guy's an ogre. But why would you say, okay, if one guy's accused of something, everybody is the same?
Well, because the context of each accusation is in the wake of the Weinstein story, which from a journalism building a story, a newspaper story, somewhere in there, if you get all the way down, now you're saying it's the third paragraph, I'm saying it would be farther down in the story, there needs to be some background of what the origin of all this is about. And it happens every time because you never know if somebody coming into a news story has not been caught up with what has happened prior to that news story.
Okay, and then we are hearing, dear panel, sexual harassment is and has to be a broad term. It is also gender neutral. Men can harass men, women can harass women, and either sex can harass the other.
Correct.
Yep.
All right.
You want more?
More.
Whatever you want. Alan, please stop talking over women on the panel as they're talking about women's issues. When they are correcting you, try to listen to what they're saying rather than telling them how women are dealing with what's happening to women. Thank you, and that's from Jay.
He's been known to talk over men, too. So.
I have, and I must say, if you go back and do a content analysis of this broadcast, you will find that the women have done most of the talking for good reason. And okay, and then Nicholas says, Alan, let the women on your show finish speaking their thoughts. Okay. David says, it would be appropriate for you to listen to the women today and withhold your comments. Okay. And Linda says, your conversation reminded me of situations where I was young that I would never tell anyone about because it was so embarrassing. Also, in some instances, I was ashamed because I let, in quotes, myself get into a difficult situation. That's I'm right. only reading first sentences because there's just too many of these. Amy says, sexual discrimination is not always as covert as harassment, yet it is also a crime against humanity. Okay. And Jennifer says, I'm totally confused at Alan's defensiveness about sexism. He is, in capital letters, not a woman. And it sometimes asked me to have dinner in my position and I was not given a promotion. That's discrimination. Did I say it wasn't? I said, in fact, the fact that you're being asked is almost always, not always, but quite frequently, an invitation. I am
But see, Alan, that's a...
It is.
We
I
need
hear
to get
you.
Onto taxes and health care, but that is a problem because, you know...
I think I gave up on that about 10 minutes ago, Teresa. Go ahead.
Tell, yes, explain,
because
Teresa.
What if you're in a business situation and you need to have a business dinner with somebody and one's a male and the other's a female? You need to be able to know you can go out and say yes to a business dinner and that it's a business dinner.
You're right.
And if
you're
it
right.
happens to be there's some romantic thing, okay, maybe... Occasionally that comes up because people do meet each other at work. But but if you say no and then, you know, maybe you say yes and it turns into a relationship. But if you say no, but as Vera says, and then they keep asking and then they're harassing you and then your work assignments change, that's a problem.
Oh.
But you can't have a blanket statement that every time a woman asks a man or a man asks a woman to a lunch or a dinner that's a business thing, that it's there's some sexual advance because
okay.
how can women work in the workplace?
Okay, so I
want to
ask both of you a question. Is it possible?
What about the tax bill? Is that what you wanted to ask?
No, no. Is it possible that both of you understand and can, as women, make the distinction for yourselves as to why you're being asked to dinner?
Context matters. So if somebody makes a proposal to go for dinner, pretending to discuss something related to work, I think women can figure that out.
Sure.
If it's not essential to meet at a certain location at a certain time, all of these issues matter. If other members of a department gather to discuss an issue at lunch in larger groups and then suddenly you're asked as an individual to meet for dinner, that is different from being asked by somebody to go for dinner, and then I would ask, what is the topic of the dinner conversation?
Would you?
Of course. You know, if I'm not, I want to know why I'm meeting for dinner with somebody, unless it's somebody who's a friend or, you know, of course I want to know why
so
I'm having
if you're,
dinner.
Just to get this straight.
Yeah.
So if your department chair is a man, I don't
know
whether they are or not, and ask you to dinner, you're going to turn around to that person and say, what's the context of the dinner?
I would ask, of course, because it would be unusual if my department chair would ask me for dinner. I would request to know what the agenda for the dinner conversation was. Especially if I wasn't interested in a relationship, my comeback would be, what is the agenda of the dinner conversation?
Okay, a couple of letters real fast. Panel, for heaven's sake, please acknowledge the painful personal story your fellow panelist Vera just told for the first time in her life. That's exactly what we're talking about. Nobody said a thing after she spoke. That's because we were all very touched by it and acknowledge it. Christopher says, thanks, as always, for an excellent show. Please take a moment to acknowledge the brave and significant disclosure by your fellow panelists regarding her own experience. All right. And then Mary says, Laura Bush has said George Sr. patting women on the behind was very innocent. Here is an insanely sexist argument. He is not entitled to grope women.
That is correct. It doesn't matter how old you are.
I will say another theme to the letters, too, that we've been getting is also about the fact that we have not brought up the Clintons in this conversation.
Okay, Alan.
The Clintons or Bill Clinton?
Well, Bill Clinton and Hillary's reaction to it.
If somebody put a letter like that in front of me, Joe, I would have read it. Believe me.
Okay, no, I'm Alan, just saying. Well, a lot of them are going to the right place. That's okay. The problem. But
Alan,
well,
Joe.
Here's one. There, right there okay. On top. Read that
all
one.
All right, I will. So I will. All right. Team, how can we be having a conversation without bringing up Bill Clinton's behavior? How about Hillary's defense of him by demonizing the women he attacked? We weren't so particular about that behavior, Roger and Warwick. No,
was he not impeached?
He was impeached.
There you go.
George
he paid
says,
a price for his behavior.
George says, you guys are
the
fighting
Trump
about an
got elected,
dilemma.
Clinton got impeached.
Well, that's a different road to go down.
Sorry, he I interrupted your letter.
No, not
rudely.
At all. You were probably right. He was impeached. And it's probably appropriate that he was impeached.
His behavior was atrocious.
But then there's the question of why he was impeached, what the real reason was. And remember that there was a political reason for doing this, right, Teresa? In other words, okay. George
well, he was
says,
impeached ultimately for lying under
oath. Lying under oath.
No, well, I don't mean that. I mean, was there a political nuance to this impeachment?
There was.
Of course. George says, you guys are fighting about an old age dilemma of the difficulty of letting good people live normal lives while stopping bad people from doing bad things. I think this is the central dilemma of all legal systems. You will probably not solve it in 10 minutes. And
well,
Alan,
good. We spent an hour and a half on it, no, actually. But we
and
still,
we didn't talk about taxes or the health care.
And Gene Mark
or...
said, Alan is wrong. Alan, Joe, please listen to women and are saying, do we condone mild racist remarks? Do bigotry or anti-Semitism have to rise to a level of a hate crime for it to be taken seriously? Let's not create a hierarchy of victimhood.
All right. There we are.
So what about...
Okay.
Let's talk about the tax bill.
Go ahead, Teresa.
No,
so there is the breaking news because the tax bill has moved forward. I believe, and...
okay, so there are key questions.
The
here.
House tax plan tilts Definitely. Toward businesses with permanent cuts. Republican lawmakers unveiled the most sweeping rewrite of the tax code in decades, tilting the U.S. toward a tax system long championed by businesses. The bill would cap the mortgage interest deduction while roughly doubling the standard deduction for families and would leave 401k plans unchanged.
Well, that's interesting. Cap the mortgage deduction, because that was always, so the question then becomes, where's the cap?
$500,000.
$500,000.
What I saw on the TV.
So if you buy a house for $1 million, you don't get the full, and you mortgage the whole thing, you don't get that full deduction, right? Okay. And
I
what
only
are the
saw
other
the little, I'm not 100% sure, I was just looking at the CNN Chiron.
And what are the and what are the other two that we're looking at? The tax deduction, the state and local taxes. Do we know what they're doing on that?
There, right? Is salt in there? State and local taxes?
Sorry. No, that's okay.
So state and local taxes was the other one that we're paying attention to here, which would, of course, bankrupt places like New York or come very close to doing that. And Massachusetts, Connecticut, and California, a very important part of this. They can only come up to what, Teresa, $1.3 trillion without going over the traces. So the way that it was first looked at is, everything they were proposing was going to be $3 trillion, which was way higher than what we're allowed to have here. So, Joe, have you now that I'm vamping?
One of the biggest flashpoints will be how the bill treats state and local tax deduction, which lawmakers are proposing to cap at $10,000. That will not be enough for Republicans in some high tax states where middle class families make heavy use of the deduction. Is that what
so
you
they left
looking
it
for?
In there?
Yes.
So, say that again.
They left it in there. It tax everything over $10,000. So they left it in there.
So
either they left it in there as a bargaining chip to take out, or they're leaving it
right.
in there. Because the problem, as you just alluded to, Alan, is that they, you know, there's about a $3-4 trillion gap that they needed to fill, and they either needed to fill it with health care or with SALT, the state and local taxes, or...
Okay, but pardon my interrupting because we're almost done here, Teresa. But if you live in a little box on Long Island, quite frequently your taxes are $25,000. So if you're limiting the deduction of state and local taxes, you know, to people who, you know, $500,000, you know, I mean... You know what you're facing. The middle class are getting screwed.
So here's the, you know, just like with health care, the question is their rhetoric. The reason they couldn't move forward on health care is because their rhetoric did not match their legislation. And so we'll see today their rhetoric Will it match their legislation? Probably not. And I think the Trump people were very artful in that they left the details to the Congress so Trump could always say, well, that's not me. But
yeah, but of course, as you go forward, the question is how educated are the American people? In other words, you just made a very good point. The word got out. You're going to lose your health care. 23 million Americans are going to lose their health care. That turned the whole thing around. Will that happen again in this tax bill?
And can they, I think that they're trying to figure out is can they pass it fast enough before people figure out what's in it and what effect it's going to have to them? Because the mantra from the Republicans has been, you're going to get $4,000 back, you're going to get $4,000 back. Well, no one who's done an analysis of this who's credible believes that that's true. Mm-hmm. But it's also complicated. And, you know, and they're going to try to do it quickly with no hearings, no real vetting of the details.
And with Trump in Asia.
And with Trump in Asia. And they really have until December 8th. They've got to get all this done by December 8th with Thanksgiving in between.
And they want to push it right through.
And they want to push it through before people know the details. But it's the numbers don't add up. I mean, you have to cut deeply. And then they do this, and it's going to happen what happened with Reagan. It's going to balloon the deficits. And so then people will say, oh, we have to deal with the deficit problem, so we have to cut programs. And so they're going to cut more deeply into housing programs and healthcare programs and such. You know, 6 months from now, they'll come back and say, oh, you know, this is going to balloon the deficit. So it's not just what's in this package. You have to look at the implications of, and don't just trust the, you know, left-wing liberals. What about Bruce Bartlett, who was the architect of the Reagan tax plan, who says, we did that, but we were wrong. Don't do it again. He's a conservative Republican.
All right. We are out of time. We'll be back tomorrow. We can talk about all kinds of other issues, or maybe just one for the whole hour and a half.
I don't know, my goodness.
Depending on what happens. My thanks to everybody. Thank you for your letters. Teresa, Ira, Vera, Alan, thank you very much. We will be back right after this.